It's very nice to see what were these distinctive memories that shaped me. And I decided to plug my ever favorite ever building in the world, and that's the radio telescope in Dwingelo.
Welcome to the Scrum Facilitators Community Podcast, the place for real conversations around Scrum.
Welcome at the Scrum Facilitators Community Podcast. I am joined today by Astrid Poot, who will introduce herself in a short while. And our podcast is a community podcast. So what we do is we get people in who have interesting topics to talk about that are slightly related to Scrum Mastery, team coaching, agile ways of working, or might be something totally different and can inspire us in our work. So I'm Sjoerd Kranendonk, I'm your host today, and I will try to tease some interesting stuff out of Astrid, although that is not a problem because she does a lot of stuff. Astrid, you're already laughing, that's a good start. You do a lot of stuff because we discussed before starting this recording, we did a short talk and it was difficult to choose topics. So can you give a brief overview of stuff you're doing at the moment or find interesting?
So you're passing the problem on to me.
Yes.
Yes, I do a lot of stuff. And I think, and I always, when people ask me what I do, it's actually rather difficult to explain. So what I think now, but it changes all the time, is that I am an artist and I work as a designer. My method is the designer, and I see problems or challenges in society and I pick them up and try to change them. And that can take many, many shapes and sizes. So I've done a huge research on ethics in our design field, but I'm also publishing a book for very small children in a few weeks about the environment. I do a lot of things. And I think what I try to do is I try to make other people happy and strong and autonomous, because I'm a big believer in everyone's own strength. I'm a bit careful towards experts and professionals, because I think they tend to make the other people into non-experts and non-professionals, but people are often stronger than they know. So the things I make, is it exhibitions, educational programs, fiction, art, everything is to show people that they're actually stronger than they may believe. And that can be in many fields.
Yes, and that is exactly one of the points where we touch in our work fields, I think, because as a Scrum Master, coaching is a big part of your role, facilitation is a big part of your role, and it's also about getting the best out of the people. It's not about you as a person hosting a workshop or running a design iteration or whatever. It's about getting the knowledge out of the group and the creativity out of the group and unlocking their potential. So there are some similarities.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see what we get more. And then, of course, how would your friends describe you?
Yeah, this is a difficult question because it's a sort of a trap for humble bragging, and I'm not a big fan of humble bragging. And but I think I meant to ask my daughter, but she's still asleep, so I didn't manage to reach her in time. So I think my friends might say I'm determined, I'm creative. I think many people said that to me, and so it's okay to repeat. And I think many people believe I'm a bit crazy, which I really like.
Okay, yeah, we need the craziness for the creative process, I think, also.
Yeah, but also that I've been reading a lot of books on system change, and one of my books is from the 70s that I'm reading now, and it states that the ill-adapted people are the people who change the world. So if we're all very much into the system and following the rules, nothing will change. But we need the ill-adapted people to change the world. So embrace your craziness, and that will cause change. So glue yourself to everything to change the world. I'm a big fan of that. So people calling me crazy, I thought at the beginning it was a bit embarrassing, but now actually I think it's really cool and important to be a bit crazy.
Yes, yes. It's the catalyst for change, I think.
Yes.
Indeed. Yes, it's and it's also been used for marketing by Apple, of course, very brilliantly in their ad, here's to the crazy ones, etc., etc. But that is the point, marketing aside, right?
Yeah,
I don't want to advertise anything. It's just pops up in my head. That's how my So thank you for that introduction. And in our podcast, we also always have a chain question that the previous guest asked, and we asked the new guest. So of course, you get this honor too. You've had time to prepare, so I'm curious to hear what the answer is, but I will read it out first, of course. And the previous question was asked by Maaike Klaassen, and she asked, what thing or experience from your childhood still influences your work today?
Yes, great question. And also very nice to think about, because I believe that everything you do in the present originates in your own past somewhere. So it's very nice to see what were these distinctive memories that shaped me. And I decided to plug my ever favorite ever building in the world, and that's the radio telescope in Dwingelo. So it's in the north of the country, next to the moor. It's a radio telescope built in the 1950s, and its only aim was to collect radio waves from the universe to see if there would be alien life. Mm-hmm. And the other thing they did was to read from these waves and understand the shape of the Milky Way. So it's a small telescope, but then it was a huge project. It was in fact the science budget for the whole country for 1 year into this single thing, a million guilders by the time. And what I like about it is that it shows so much love and hope and optimism, that you can build something that's completely abstract in a part of the country where there's no scientific, if not, no science culture or science history, into a nature reserve, and you get everyone on board and spend all this money. And then there's this strange thing that doesn't concretely benefit society in any way, only that it shows dreams and hope and being interested in the rest of the universe. So as a child, my father used to work there, and I used to cycle past it all the time. I've always wondered about this beautiful machine that's standing there. And so I've been talking, my father passed away a short time ago, so I did a little book on the telescope to honor him, and I talked to the people who still work there, and they had this beautiful anecdote that it was initiated by Professor Oort, which is a physics professor in, I believe, Delft at the time. Mm-hmm. And he wanted a spot for his radio telescope where it was quiet, where there was no traffic, no telecoms, no radio signals disturbing the telescope. And he pointed at Dwingelo, and then he went to the village, a small village, convinced the village council, but also the forester, who is the boss of the area where it's placed. And he said to these people, your village will have a view on the universe like no other place on earth will ever have. And with these words, he just won them over, and this crazy project started. And that's been an influence through my life, that how no matter how big your dreams are, you can always try to realize them. And even the people you don't expect to convince want to be convinced of your beautiful story. And it's still there. You can visit. It's lovely to go there.
Cool. We put a link in the show notes so people can easily find it. Yeah. And it's also the story also shows the power of storytelling. Not just your story that you're telling, but also, of course, in the story, how the people in the village embraced this project, basically. Yeah. How they got won over. It's awesome. So if there are any product owners listening, this is how you present a vision.
Yeah, listen to Professor Oort, yeah.
yes, great example. Thank you for that. Yeah. I don't know if you've had time to think about it yet, but do you have a question for the next guest already?
Yes, I'm a big collector of beautiful things, but they can be anything. They can be a plastic model snail or a rock or whatever, because it links to stories again. So it's also storytelling. So I want to ask the next guest, what is your favorite object you own and what's the story behind it?
Okay, cool. That's pretty nice. I'm already thinking about it myself. And that's, of course, also why we already let you ask it in the podcast, so our listeners can already think about it a bit for themselves. And I'm very curious who will get to answer it.
Yeah.
We will see in a little while. Okay, thank you. That about rounds up the introduction. Are there any things that we missed maybe that you still want to put forward for people who don't know you yet or to advertise maybe?
To advertise? No, I don't advertise. I think it should be the storytelling today that is the advertising. So I don't advertise. And I think what might be interesting to add is that what I love about my job, because I remember you asking me that too, and
yes.
I think that really says something about us as a designer. What I love about my job is that I learn so much. So every project, every topic, every encounter causes new ideas and new knowledge. And mm-hmm. I think that's the best part of my job, that I get to learn so much. And being in this learning attitude is, I think, for everyone so rewarding, because you get to engage with other people from this attitude in a very nice way, but it's also so interesting to know always know more. I hope it will never stop. So that's the best part of my job. So that's why my topics are so diverse. I do many things because I'm very interested in everything, probably.
Yeah, the good news is the knowledge will never end. Probably there's always more knowledge to be gained and more experiences to be gained. So if you have this attitude, you will never be bored. That's a good thing. And if we then move to maybe your current area of work or focus, so what area are you currently most passionate about? And do you have any tips or advice for practitioners who want to dive into that area or maybe not as experienced yet to learn about that?
Yeah, so there's a sort of a route in my knowledge development. So I mentioned it before, ethics is now my main area of research. And that originated in my previous topic that I worked on for many years, and that's maker education and the maker movement. Mm-hmm. So that's the movement where people use and research technology for fun. It's a very fun movement, and many things that are originating in the maker movement actually make their way into companies and into society. And it's very much about repairing things, building things, making funny, crazy things. So I did a lot of projects on that, and I did a lot of projects on maker education in primary schools. So a lot of schools were actually engaging in technology and making and creativity because of my research. And of course, when I was working, that one of the core values of the maker movement is that you share, that it's non-commercial, and that you have a friendly attitude towards everything. And as a designer, I use this maker education research topic as a sort of a break for my commercial work. But then I thought, why do I need a break for my commercial work? Why can't I change my commercial work? It's so sad to have to step away from the core work to be comforted. So I changed my commercial work, got rid of it, and only do non-profit work now. And now, so that started. So then I started to do the ethics research, because there was once I was with our team, we made a beautiful project for families who have a little baby with Down syndrome. And it's a beautiful project where families learn to work together with their small child to develop the child and to be whole as a family the situation. And it was a beautiful project. And of course, these projects tend to get many awards. So we were invited to London to pick up 2 Lovie Awards. And I said, yeah, but it's very shoestring, this project. So we can only come to London if there's something in it for the project more than just we getting drunk on a very posh party next to the river. There has to be more to it. So I said we can only come to London if we are allowed on stage to do a speech on our projects and about the responsibility of the creative business. Yeah. So we did that. It was very good. And afterwards there was this fancy drink, and everyone stepped up. They were queuing up to meet us and to express their gratitude. And it's incredible that you do this. You're such an example. We're definitely going to support your project. And many promises were made. And then afterwards, nothing happened. Nothing at all. Nothing. So we were just sort of the comfort for the evening. But afterwards, none of these people reached out to us. None of them, and nothing really changed. And that got me thinking, because I've been working in advertising and in different design agencies, and I never met awful people there. Everyone's very nice, very committed to good goals, supporting Greenpeace, being part of Extinction Rebellion. They do it all, but at the same time, they do this awful commercial work. And I wanted to know why. So that's when I started my ethics research. And a lot of the why has to do with the fact that people feel, when you didn't study philosophy, you're not entitled to have an opinion on ethics, because it's very difficult and you have to know how to quote Kant and you have to really understand what they all meant and said, and it's really hard to do all that. And so you have to be an expert before you're allowed to speak. And it's going to cost you. If you want to be an ethical designer, that will mean you will never have any money again. You'll have to run your computer on Linux and use only open source software, which is a sore to creative people who want to have fancy tools. And you won't have any income, so you'll never look fancy again. And the final one, it's the system. The system can't be changed. It's the way of the world. It can't be changed. But then in my work, I've made a good living with doing only good projects. I don't wear snake leather boots, but I don't like snake leather boots. And so I'm not very rich, but I'm rich enough. And and I've never had this difficulty in attitude towards the big ethics philosophers. Mm-hmm. So it's not a big problem. So I thought, the things that I do unconsciously, how can I make them available for more people to help them understand that they're actually much more powerful than they believe. So I talked to many people and did a lot of research came to the conclusion that if we empower people to express their personal knowledge and values that are given to them during their upbringing or studies or religion or football club or whatever, and connect them to the knowledge of the great philosophers, which often is down to the same thing, but in a different, expressed in a different way, and we can help people to vocalize these values in a professional way, then we can actually change the field of design. So it's not enough to say, this doesn't feel good, because your colleagues can't deal with it doesn't feel good. Mm-hmm. But if you can express why it doesn't feel good to you, there's often a very strong line of thinking that lies under it that is actually very similar to the thoughts of the great philosophers. And then if you can express your thoughts in that manner and share them with the team, then you can actually change things for the better in a professional context. So that's the scope of my research. And I've been doing it for, I think, 2-3 years now, and I'm working towards an end product. But of course, because ethics is an activity, it will not be another book, because there's many books on ethics and design, but they're all very big and fat and difficult, and who has the time to read? So it will be workshops, it will be meetings, and maybe it will be some provoking punk style magazines that force you into action. I'm not sure about that. So I'm working now towards a method of sharing that will benefit most people, without adding more books to the stack that nobody reads anyway. So that's in short my research.
Nice. And so if people want to start with also looking into ethics, or maybe if there's scrum masters or team coaches, or I'm just going to use the word, I know you don't like it, professionals working in companies who want to say, okay, I want to add some ethics stuff to the discussion with my team or with my boss or whatever. Yeah. How to start?
Well, you can start by inviting me. I really like for my project to learn. So this is not a commercial plea. This is really for me to learn. I'd like to be a part of that process. So please invite me over. I've done so for some companies already, and it's really interesting to do. But I've also written quite a few articles already that help you. So we can put them in the show notes. So there's actually rather a few tools I developed that are a good guide in working with your team in such a way. So I've made a super small summary of the main lines of thinking in philosophy. It's like one drawing that has three theories in one, and it has only 10 words, I think. But also I've made a set of 10 questions that help you to understand for yourself what you believe to be good. And by answering these questions for yourself, you can then create a set of values for yourself that can be the starting point of a discussion with the team. And that's really interesting, because if you take these personal values as a core, then you will benefit from the diversity of your team very much. It's very interesting to see people coming from a different cultural background or a different sexual orientation or a different age or a different part of the country to bring in different values and discuss these values. Then you're very quickly can come to an understanding of what you believe to be good as a team. So on my website, there's many tools to do that. So I'll make a nice list, collect them into one blog, and then we'll put it under the...
That's a really nice thing. So people can just start it. And obviously, if they have questions about it, they can reach out to you, right? So
yes, very much. Please do, because it's really, because I've been doing the research, but of course, it's really a collective effort. I've talked to many people and I've met many people who really opened up about their doubts in the industry and about the doubts about their work. And it's so valuable to share this knowledge, and getting involved more people will add to the force of the movement. So
exactly. And maybe it's also worthwhile, I don't know what you think of this, but to define what we mean by design, because a lot of times when I speak to people and ask them, what do you think design is? They come up with just the visual part of stuff, right? So they think, oh, it's designing a website or a poster or whatever, or maybe sound design if they are a bit more creative in their thoughts. But I think design is more than that. What would you say?
Yes, I'm really radical in that field. I think everything that tries to change the behavior of someone else is design. Everything. So a person stopping you at the road is designing a situation he wants to change. So and this definition, I didn't come up with it myself. It was invented by Viktor Papanek in 1974, and he says everything is design, and design is education. Everything and everything is design. So you always try to change behavior by designing something. And if you take this definition at the core, it also means that professional designers are not the people who are exclusively entitled to design. Everyone can design. And I'm really fascinated and inspired and humiliated makes me feel small, humble by the actual accidental design that's happening all around us. And I think as professionals, we need to look at that much, much more carefully. So there was a very nice little story about the supermarket where I go, next close to my house. And in the corona period, of course, the people at the supermarket had to keep working and having all these risks of being infected by all these people who were scared and in a hurry. So they designed a routing through the supermarket, and it was a very personal appeal to the people in the shop to please, please, please stick to the rules they made. And it really worked because it was a personal appeal. So the supermarket professional is actually in that moment was a far better designer than the corporate designers of the supermarket who came up with stickers and arrows that everyone ignored because it's corporate communication, who cares. So this this cashier was actually the better designer. And I think as designer, it's very good to look at the world from that perspective, to be very humble about the influence and the attitude that we have towards design, and also be very aware of the damage we might do. So
yes, and that's the ethics part again, of course.
Yes.
The other side of the ethics.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so the absolute core of my ethics research is or the answer to my ethics research is to question when you're in a situation as a designer, in the broadest definition, there's two things you can do. You can ask yourself, will this help solve the situation? That's the first question. And then the second question is as important, will it damage anyone or anything? And if it damages anyone or anything, it's not a good solution. And if you stick to these two questions, you'll get stuck all the time. But that's interesting. Where it hurts, there's the problem. So you have to investigate the pain. But if you stick to these two questions, you will always be aware of the things that you do and the things that you cause. So for instance, now with the AI happening, everyone's really enthusiastic and it's going to solve many of our problems, maybe, I don't know. But it also causes a lot of computer calculation action, which causes a lot of energy use, which causes warming of the earth. So there's much more to it than only this clever tool that might or may or may not help us. There's a lot of things behind it that are actually also very important to take into account, because if we're going to use chat, if we're going to use it, there will be data centers, we will need more data centers, and we know we don't like those, but that will be the consequence. So really think of your work in the broadest perspective. I know you can't change it in the broadest perspective, but be aware. And from this awareness, you might change into someone, or you might find some space in your own practice to make small changes or big changes, depending on what you want and what you can do. Because I'm also very friendly. I don't demand people to do things.
Yes, exactly. We have to invite people to investigate this, right? And make it also safe to explore. Because that was one thing I was thinking about. And I'm also going to ask you about a challenge you see and have overcome, and maybe tips how to overcome it. But first, I want to give you this challenge or hypothesis, maybe, why I think many people steer clear of this topic. Because I think when they start investigating it, they will in self-reflection feel like hypocrites, or are afraid that they will be called out as hypocrites, because you're asking these questions, you're asking critical questions of social media usage, but you do it on Facebook. Why are you on Facebook, right? Mm-hmm. So sometimes you get these responses, and I think sometimes people are afraid of exposing themselves in this way. And I think that is one of the challenges we have, to get more people thinking critically about these design choices and the influences.
Yes, they're afraid to hurt their reputation.
Yes,
and they're afraid to cause anger in other people, and that's also really scary. I mean, when I started this research and I did my first publication on it, I thought, oh, now I'll never have a client again, because this is so pain in the ass, difficult. Everything's a problem, never a nice meeting anymore, because she's always finding something to discuss about. But of course that didn't happen, because I find when you think something, usually many more people are thinking the same thing, but maybe feel a bit more reluctant to express their thoughts. So when you express your thoughts, you're actually doing it for many people who are a little less brave than you. So I think it's important to do that, because it will comfort other people and make space for other people to express these thoughts too. So if you invoke anger, then you've hit a button. So anger is actually really good, because if someone's angry, there's something at stake. And that's interesting, because if it hurts, then there's a problem to solve. So actually causing anger is really good. And expressing your criticism of Facebook on Facebook, yes, of course, because you need a reach. So there's always this goals and means calculation that you always have to perform. And perfection is really, like you said before, perfection doesn't exist, or perfection is in the way of done. What is
perfect is the enemy of done.
Yeah, perfect is the enemy of done. So if you want everything to be perfect, nothing will ever change.
Exactly.
Because if I would be very consequent in my ethics attitude, I would be invisible to the world, because even sharing things online is already damaging the planet. So, but then nothing would change, because I would be just isolated and eating grass or something. So there's always this calculation, but if you're aware of it, and if you understand that anger is actually a very powerful positive energy to cause and to feel, then you can change. And I like it that you're never the only one who believes it.
Yes, so that's very important. So, and this also brings maybe a nice full circle, because you started out with your own introduction with being a bit crazy, and being a bit crazy also takes courage, or it's similar, right? It means you do stuff that other people would not do probably, and this means you can break these barriers and create these spaces for other people to think, oh well, maybe I wouldn't put it that way, but there is something to this, and let me see how I would do it. So that's really interesting, and I think that's really powerful. And for me, one of the main takeaways of this talk already, aside from all the other great stuff you say about design and ethics, and I think looking at the time, because time management is my Achilles heel, I'm very open about that. And we discussed this also before. You're used to podcasts of an hour. We aim for half an hour. We're going to bring it to a close. And who knows, maybe we follow up later. Or we can organize some workshops together for people to dive deeper if they like. But for now, I think there's already a lot of gold in this. So I want to move to the closing. And then we have basically also three standard questions that we have to also give people some more stuff to dive into. And the first one is, what book or article would you currently recommend to our listeners?
Yes, so I'm going to break the rules. I'm going to mention three, but they're really short, so I hope it's allowed. So first, I think it's very good to know that we have, as a society, we have this understanding of good. So please read the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Read it once a month. Just look at it and think, okay, is my work still in line with this super important declaration? And I think many commercial activities are actually not in line. So people are entitled to peace and quiet. I'm not sure if TikTok and the likes are actually, maybe they're actually violating this human right. So go over the Universal Declaration of Human Rights once a month. Then in the ethics context, read the publication A Bit Rich by Eilish Lawler. It's a research into the value and the cost of jobs in society. And of course, it states, as you would expect, that low-paid, caring jobs are very important to society, but are very badly paid. Mm-hmm. And the people who are paid the most are usually also the people who damage society the most. So it's very nice to read. It's actually a calculation of the worth of different professions. And finally, for poetry, read the book Entangled Life by Merlin Sheldrake. It's about fungi and lichen. And that's just the best topic ever. It's so interesting. And so as a metaphor, you can use it and slap it on everything. But it's also just a very poetic, nice read.
It's a nice triptych that you leave us with. And I think people can surely tag on to this. So I'm not mad that you put three.
Two.
Okay, we're not publishing this podcast. She broke the rule.
Oh, God. Well, thank you.
Yes. And we already have the question down. So that's out of the way. That was usually in this place. We already discussed a bit. People may reach out to you probably through LinkedIn or your website, which will be linked. But do you have any public talks or appearances planned currently?
It's always very irregular, and for the coming months it's quiet. I have some teaching, but that's not publicly available.
No.
So right now I'm not in the time coming.
Okay.
A lot of talks, but not open. But I'll publish them on my website. And please reach out, because everything I do is thanks to the society and the community. So whatever you have to ask and say, please reach out. I'd like that.
I hope people will do that. And I also want to reiterate your invitation of getting you in their company to do some workshops and learn together about how ethics and design work or could work better, basically, because that was what we're looking for, right?
Yeah.
For their work. So thank you very much for your time. I really
thank
enjoyed
you for inviting me.
Yes, I really enjoyed this conversation. I do get the idea that if you have an hour to talk, that's more luxury. But there's also some value in keeping it short and focused.
True.
And yeah, who knows? Maybe we can speak again. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Scrum Facilitators Community Podcast, the place for real conversations around Scrum. Do you have a story to share in this podcast? Get in touch with us at podcast@scrumfacilitators.com.